Welcome to the Marketing Genius Podcast, a show where we interview the most influential people in real estate to teach you how to generate leads, build a brand, and convert more customers.
What's up, everybody? Grant Wise here. Welcome to the Marketing Genius Podcast. I'm very excited for our guest today, Mr. Rob Chavez. Rob is a big influence in the DMV market and the Virginia market. He's got a massive team. He was recently on stage with Mr. Gary Keller himself, talking about how they are growing and expanding and really creating more influence in their community. And I'm excited to have that conversation today. So Rob, man, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, man. Grant, I appreciate you. A lot of this is just stuff that you and I have been talking about over the last year and a half. So it's been a ride. It's been fun. I appreciate it.
A chance meeting. What were the odds we were going to connect like that in New York?
She took me kicking and screaming, and I was like, I don't want to go. And she's like, let's go. And so that's, I went, and then I was, you know, obviously blown away. So, we connected, and I was like, oh, this guy's speaking my language for sure.
It was fun. So what we're talking about, guys, is last year, we were invited to a little bitty mastermind, kind of an intimate setting. It wasn't a paid thing. It was just a good group of people getting together. And a student of mine, who's now become a great friend, Isabel, dragged Rob to the event. And we got to connecting. And I think we even ended up having dinner that night and just kept the conversation going. And Rob's invited me out to speak multiple times. And I just wanted to get him on here because he's a wealth of information himself. And so we're going to kind of dive into that conversation. So for the people that don't know you, Rob, who are you, man? How'd you get to where you are today?
I'm a dad. I'm a husband, right? Little girl is 17 years old now, which totally blows my mind because she grew up in the business. And you know, she doesn't want to have anything to do with real estate. Hopefully that'll change. I think she saw how hard mom and dad, you know, were grinding in the early years. Yeah, I'm blessed. Got a beautiful little girl, married, been married to my wife 18 years. She's my business partner. She's a CFO of our business. She, on the side, because she is a creative, she's both analytical and creative. She creates a lot of our video content, believe it or not, right?
Nice.
And we've been having a ton of fun. All those videos that you see, like, that's all just her having fun. Right.
She grabbed me. You guys had me out to speak like a month or two ago, and she grabbed me and had the video camera out. She's like, hey, stop. I need you to talk to me for a couple of minutes. So I didn't know she was the one doing it all. I just thought she was filling in, but that's awesome.
No, man, she does it all. It's just like her fun thing, right? She works like, I don't know, 15-hour days because she's just always doing video stuff afterwards. She has so much fun. So, I run a team. We did about $120 million last year in volume. In our market, that's about 275 transactions. We believe in going deep, and this has been a relatively new strategy for us over the last like 3 to 4 years. After I attended one of Gary Keller's ESO expansion systems orientation trainings, we decided, you know what, instead of trying to be all things to all people, let's try to go deep in very specific markets that we want to own. And then we would set up expansion organizations all around that, right? And so so that's what we've been doing for the last 4 years. I can't think of a better way to layer all that we're doing on the ground game with everything that you've been teaching on the social game, right? And it's just really kind of amplified our voice in the marketplace. So that's been great. But before that, man, I was an investor. I bought and sold 20 homes a year with my wife for around 3 years. Before that, I owned an executive recruiting business with my best friend for 7 years. He still runs that business today. He's still my best friend. And that was really my, you know, I was buying real estate part-time, for those 7 years. And I fell in love with real estate in that process. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2005, I asked him to buy me out of the business, out of the recruiting business, knowing that we were probably going to go into some kind of real estate recession. But I figured that it would be a buying opportunity for us. I made a move that I now regret, but at the time I thought I was a genius, right? But I now regret. I had accumulated 7 assets in the DMV, and I sold them all around the spring of 2005, right? which was like timing the market perfectly. And so then the market started obviously, you know, crashing in 2000. People don't realize in 2006, it really stalled out. 2007 started coming down. 2008 was just like oblivion in our market where we were, right? So I was like, man, I timed the peak perfectly. The reason why I regret that is because I liquidated some really good assets that I wish I still held today, right? I took that money, but that was kind of my nest egg to start investing and playing in another sub-market and learning the business. But I wish I had learned, I wish I had not liquidated those assets. I think, you know, I work with a lot of investors. Their number one regret is ever having sold one of their assets. And you only look at that, you know, in the rearview mirror. At the time, you need the money. But in the rearview mirror, you're like, wow, if I just held those for 15 or 20 years, you know, it's game over, right? Mm-hmm. So anyhow, we accumulated a lot of properties in 2007, 2008, 2009. And I was just playing investor full time during that time. And then around 2009, I said, you know, I think I want to create my earned income on the agent side of the business. I had read the book, The Millionaire Real Estate Agent book. It resonated with me because I never had a business plan on the agent side. It was just built on hustle, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any systems and models, and I was craving systems and models. So Gary's book was a system and model for me, and then I just went to work. So from 2009 to today, we built out our agent business. We still have an investment business. We still have a construction business. So those have always been active pieces of what I do overall. But the agent business is what funds everything else, right? That is the cash machine, right? Mm. When it comes, and I enjoy that side. I enjoy that side, right? I love it. So
I love it. So talk to me about, I have a question. You know, what did you learn back during the recession? I always like asking these questions to people that went through it. You were in expansion mode where a lot of people were in contraction mode, it sounds like. What were some of the biggest benefits of the previous downturn in the market to you? Was it just that you were able to jump in and acquire a ton of things for very little, or were there some rough times mixed in with that? Well, talk me through those couple of years.
Sure. So it was it made me rich, made me wealthy, right? From a financial standpoint, there's different levels of wealth, right? But from that, Warren Buffett came on CNBC, right? And he said, when everybody's fearful, be greedy. And when everybody's greedy, be fearful, right? And those words literally resonated with me. I remember watching that and thinking, everybody's fearful right now. Every sign in the yard was a foreclosure and was a short sale. And I went back and I looked at all the sales for like the last decade. And I was like, the purchase to rent ratio in our market had never hit the 1% rule. It's just our market's more of an affluent market, right? It never hit the 1% rule. It had been year. I couldn't find it, right? But what I was finding was that I could buy the asset for like $120, put in 10 to 20,000 into it, and then rent it for $1,500 a month, which was the 1% rule in our market. And I remember talking to a wealthy guy, like a friend of mine that had a lot of cash, and I just happened to just mention it to him, right? Now, if you remember, I was recently self-employed, right? So it's not like anybody's giving loans in 2008 to a recently self-employed guy in the world of real estate when the world is crashing, right? So I just happened to mention this to him. And he said, you know what? If you find properties like that, I will fund you. I will fund us. You find them. You fix them. We'll cash out, which now is called the Burr method. Nobody ever taught us this. We just kind of like figured it out, right? And then I would find the tenants and then I would manage the property, right? And so he put up all the capital and I put up all the knowledge and sweat equity. And we proceeded to do one a month, right? Now I wish I could go back in time and do 10 a month, right? But at the time, it was kind of scary, right? Like nobody else was doing it. I was competing with maybe one other person on some of these properties. Mm-hmm. And so, so I learned that to answer your question, the greatest opportunity to create wealth happens in transition periods like that. Mm-hmm. And as long as you have the right knowledge and understand your numbers, I understood the numbers. It was like, worst case scenario, if these properties don't go up in value, I can rent them all day long. And I'm in this game for the long haul. So I don't need to do this, you know, and try to get rich fast. I'm in the let's build wealth over the long term, right? But in the early years, here was the struggle, right? That was 2008. From 2005 to 2008, I was buying 20 homes a year, right? Without a real strong financial, I was financially illiterate, let's just put it that way, right? compared to where I am today. I didn't understand my numbers. I didn't understand budgets. I didn't understand my P&L. I just said, I just want to do deals and I want to make more money than I spend. That was like the extent of my knowledge. Even though I had run that other business with my best friend for 7 years, he was the guy that was always doing the finances. It wasn't me, right? And so, so you have to picture this. We are buying, renovating, and then selling properties turnkey to investors in a submarket. And the investors are then saying to us, well, this is great, but we want you to manage the property for us, right? So my wife was like, awesome. We manage our own properties. We know how to manage properties. So, you know, here we are buying, renovating, selling homes. And then we're managing property for investors. Within a year and a half, we'd accumulated 300 assets to manage for other investors, right? Mm-hmm. Our own properties and hers. And she nor I ever had management experience, except for our little, you know, 7 properties that we'd owned prior. And she definitely didn't have any accounting experience, right? Today, the software is a lot easier, but at the time, she did a great, I remember she was really good with all the owner statements, but her P&L, I was like, I didn't understand it. It was a mess to me, right? And so what happened was we literally had to sit ourselves down and really get educated on how to build a business, not from a lead generation marketing standpoint, because we were always kind of good at that. It was like, how do we actually learn how to build the back end of the business? Mm. From a financial perspective, because we're also good at the servicing operations side. Great lead gen, great ops, bad on the finance side. Well, you make profit on the finance side, right? So that was challenging for us for a couple of years, right? Until we figured it out. And I actually think that that's why we're actually so good at it now, because we close our books at the end of the month. We understand our P&Ls, we understand our budgets, we understand our cash flow projections. Like that was a big deal for me to get a grip on, because for many years I felt out of control, right? And when you're flipping that many homes and nobody's kind of shown you how to do it properly, you feel like you're robbing Peter to pay Paul, right? Yeah. I'd get done with a project, I'd make profit from that project, and then another opportunity would come about, and I would use that cash to go buy another property, but never put any of the money in my pocket. I mean, it was a mess, right?
Yeah, and that's something that every agent's got to understand. I mean, that's not just those aren't just laws that apply to investors. I mean, those things are great principles to follow in real estate, because you have an industry with a lot of people that don't have any financial wherewithal, just don't have any of that information. And the ability to manage cash flow, I think, is what separates the goods from the greats. I mean, you can have some people that can come in and hustle and make money, but it's the people that can manage cash flow and understand it and understand how to make money, you know, work in unique ways that really go off to be uber successful. So how's that really taken hold in your agent side of your business? Did you take a lot of that knowledge and apply it?
Yeah, in fact, that's where we started. Expansion kind of became not easier, but we understood, hey, these are all little business units, right? Mm-hmm. And each one has its own P&L and each one has its own budget. And I could coach and train and teach my agents how to run a business. Not so much be agents, right? Like, you're going to be an agent, but you have to learn how to run a business. And so it's translated really well, because we've been able to show agents the financial side of how to create wealth in their life and create a business that actually is worth something, right? So great books for that. Profit First, right, is a great book. Simple Numbers is another one that's a great book. And you know what it did? It gave me confidence as a business person, right? You would always hear people say, hey, numbers are the language of business. And I grew up, right, I got a C in accounting. I was always like, math was like, I had this like mental block. And it wasn't until I really forced myself to figure this out. And truth be told, they're really simple numbers, right?
Yeah.
You just need to know what levers to pull. You need to understand them, but they're simple.
They really are. And I think that, you know, I would agree. This isn't something that I ever really paid attention to, but I tell people now, because I get asked all the time, people about college, like, should you go to college? What should you do? I'm going to go study business, or I'm going to go study entrepreneurship. And it's like, no, don't do those things. Like, I think you'll learn stuff about business. That's great. But if you're going to start your own business, just go start your own business, because you're going to learn more in 4 years than you would ever learn 4 years going to school. Get a finance degree, like get an accounting degree. If you can make money work, you can make business work. And that, like I tell people all the time, business is math and personal development. If you can understand the money, and you can consistently work on being a better person, like, you will be stupidly successful. But
100% agree.
Yeah.
100% agree.
Well, let's dive into like some of the marketing and some of those types of things. You guys have really embraced this branding, social media, this hyper local mindset. Talk me through some of the stuff you guys are doing today on a hyper local level that's really helping you broaden your reach and deepen your influence in that market.
Yeah, I was talking to Gary about this, and one of the things that that I kind of understood but didn't know how to do it until you and I were like more in discussion was, how do you become omnipresent, right? Where you're just everywhere. People just see you as the authority. And, you know, you start thinking, I can only knock on so many doors. I can only send so much direct mail. I can only do that, right? Because of how leverage works. But what we decided to do was first start small, right? We picked small geographic markets. And I'm going to give you an example of how I did it on the psychographic side, like, you know, focused on a type of person, psychographic marketing. But I'm going to talk about geographic right now. So we picked like 2,000 homes. We said, okay, we're first going to play the ground game. We're going to call. We're going to door knock. We're going to be present at the ground, belly to belly level, right? And then we're going to layer it with direct mail. Then we're going to do events within that area. And then we're going to layer it, and we're all doing it simultaneously. And then we're going to layer it with social media, right? Where we could actually drop a pin and talk to our audience through our TV channel, because that's how I see it, right? Specifically to them. And then what I want to be able to do is, I want to create value in that exchange. I just don't want to be a walking billboard. I want to create content that's interesting for the community. So I started interviewing. So I'll tell you two things I did. I started interviewing local business owners and featuring local business owners by just having them share their story, kind of like you're doing here, right? And through the act of helping them share their story and then using our social media platform and getting their story out to the world, it created a lot of social currency, what I call social currency. And that social currency then gets monetized through referrals, through business, by them sharing our content with their audience and creating new fans, creating new raving fans. And I started realizing what we're really doing is we're building community, right? And we're connecting people. And it's a lot of fun, man. Like, I enjoy doing that. I find that there's a lot of small and mid-sized business owners that aren't very good at marketing themselves, right? In the world of real estate, we've actually do a much better job compared to like the florist or, you know, the restaurant owner that's out there, right? They don't have a lot of knowledge about how to do what we do. And so we add a tremendous amount of value by, you know, just helping them understand what we're doing. And we get in the relationship with those people. The other thing I wanted to do, Grant, was it's a little ambitious, but I wanted to make sure that I, you know, Reston is a pretty big area, but it's kind of this self-contained area. I wanted to make sure that I did an aerial drone tour of every street, that I did an interview of every HOA president in our area, that I did a walking tour of every street, you know, in Reston. And I wanted to create so much evergreen content and new content, right, that that just surpassed anybody else, right? And I saw that nobody was doing it, by the way. Nobody was doing it at a consistent high level. So it's just an opportunity to create a bigger brand, a bigger voice in my community while having fun, right? And connecting people. So that's what that's what we've done. And then we use different strategies to drive people in their database, you know, stuff that you taught us to do, right? Using listings and all the rest. But I found it's the brand building and being omnipresent that's created a lot of social currency. And that's helped us a lot. And then I can just model that and teach my team in Ashburn to do it, and Gainesville do it, and Leesburg do it. You know, it's just a formula.
I love it. So when you're creating this social currency and you're creating in you're engaging in your community, you're creating content around your community, what are some of the things that you're talking about? I see that there's like highlights of the community when you're talking about interviewing HOAs and doing drone footage and those types of things, but how do you get integrated into a community like that where the florist wants to have you come highlight their business because they recognize that you're so good at it? I mean, it has all of this built you up a platform of social influence where now people are coming to you? Or talk me through like how you got started and integrated in doing some of that.
So that's a great question. It's absolutely created a platform, right? I'm like actually a little blown away by the platform that it creates. It's kind of cool, right? But what I did was I found somebody that already had a lot of influence in the market. She's somebody that does a lot of online marketing herself. She runs a local brewery, okay? And I'd always admired the business that she was building, right? And, you know, her whole thing is, I think it's like building community, brewing beer or something like brewing beer, building community, right? Like she's very community centric. She's very networked. And so what I did was I approached her and said, I really want to create a spotlight about your business. And this is what the vision of it looks like. I created a shell of what our Rest and Dig site looks like. And I told her that I would be able to really share her business with my audience, right? My local audience. And she gave me a shot, right? Once I got her, then it was easy. Because then we did a really good job of featuring her and pouring into her and promoting her business. And then she said, you know who would really benefit from this?
There we go.
And she referred me to the next business owner. Yeah. And then that business owner referred me to the next business owner. And then literally now it's just like, hey, I'd love to be featured on your Rest and Digs, right? I'm like, that's cool. That's really cool. It's almost like its own like little media.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. You guys have become a media company first. And as a byproduct, you can do anything else in the market that you want. This is something we've been trying to shove down people's throats for the last several years. But something I want to point out there is if you probably had gone to that woman with a brewery and just said, hey, I want to figure out how we can do business together. It probably wouldn't have been such an easy conversation. You know, I noticed that when I didn't have a podcast or I didn't have any video content, I didn't have any shows or anything like that, I would call people all the time and try to drum up ways that we could connect and, hey, let's do this. And I'd love to help you. I didn't have a platform, right? I didn't have attention, at least in the ways that I, you know, thought that I did. But the moment I started a podcast and I started reaching out to these high level influencers, and we did as a team, it was like instant, right? Mm-hmm. Instantly, like, mm-hmm. Yes, you have it. And this is what I'm trying to point out, guys. Listen to this. It's the florist or the brewery owner. I need attention. That's what's going on in their mind. I need attention. I got to market. I got to spend the money. I got to advertise. I got to do all these things. This guy has attention and he's offering to give me some of that. All I got to do is this interview with him. This is great, right? So when you do what Rob is explaining to you right here, other business owners in your local community suffer from the same thing that you do, and that is that you don't have enough attention. And yeah. When you can help supplement that, Rob, law of reciprocity kicks in. Hey, you just did this nice thing for me. I want to try to do something nice for you. I'm going to connect you with a bunch of other influencers that want more attention. And it's just powerful, man. I mean, when you do have that platform and it begins to get developed, it's crazy how willing other people are to jump on and be a part of it. A, because they need more attention. But when you get an uninterrupted hour with one of the biggest influencers in your community, you get an opportunity to really develop a cool relationship with them.
Yeah. And, you know, I have to tell you, like, and this is just in my heart, like, maybe it's because we had already kind of built our business. We had other lead sources coming in. I was just having fun, right? I am genuinely interested in the entrepreneur's journey, their story of how they built their business, right? Like, that to me is a lot of fun because I feel like we're kindred spirits in a little bit. Like, they went on an entrepreneurial journey and we went on an entrepreneurial journey, right? And when you go on an entrepreneurial journey, like, that affects your family, right? That, like, there's a certain DNA of the person that decides that they're going to go do that. And it spreads throughout. And I want to understand, why did you decide to open up a cycling business? Why did you decide to open up a brewery? How did that come about, right? Why did you just, like, I featured this one, you know, awesome lady. Her business is called Danis Granola, right? Her husband just got us access to a $2 million listing, right? And that was a byproduct. But she was a small little new business that we loved eating her granola at, you know, the farmer's market. And my wife was like, hey, we should interview her. Her story is pretty powerful, right? And we learned all about her journey as an entrepreneur and how this came about. And that to me is exciting to share with our community because that's what the community is about. It's about understanding the fabric of everybody that lives in the community, right? So I think that you have to go at it from just a giver's gain philosophy. Like, I don't expect, you know, the law of reciprocity just kicks in. It's a lot of fun. And it's created a new platform. So now I'm just thinking, how can I do more of it? Who else can we feature? What other lines of business can we, like, how can we just make this just a living, breathing, awesome environment for people to want to be a part of?
You know, it's incredible what happens to your income when you stop focusing on it, right? Like, it just becomes a byproduct. It becomes a result of value and the contribution and the giving that you're doing in your local community. And we have so many agents, obviously, that are employed to make a commission. And I'm on this big community over commission kick, right? I think you should pay more attention to your community than you do your commission. And as a byproduct, you'll make more money than you ever have in your entire life. And I'm not, maybe you're not making more money than you've ever made in your entire life, but has that focus, the less of a focus, not that you're not focusing on profit, right? Business owners should do that, but less of a focus on commission and more of a focus on community. Has that really just, like, one fed the other in a unique way? I mean, have you felt that?
It'll be interesting for you to ask me that question a year from now, okay? But let me tell you, the transition that's happened over the last 2 years, right? From doing this kind of thing, focusing more on the community, that it's attracted people to my organization. It's attracted people to my team, right? So it's not just attracting deals, it's attracting people, right? And those people, our team members, right, go out into the community and serve the community. And it's allowed me to be able to transition from I do it to they do it, right? It's I do it, we do it, they do it. That's kind of the journey a lot of times with the agent that's trying to understand how to scale and seventh level their business, right? And so so much business has just come to us as opposed to me having to go chase it, right? And I could feel the shift occur with our status in the marketplace, right? And our status among, and so hyper-locally our status, but also our status among agents. And it's already translated into me being able to set up other offices around where we live. But I'll be curious to see where this takes us 2 years from now, right? I think it's gonna be checkmate for us completely being the most, we're already the most dominant agent in the market, but I feel like we're invisible in our market. I feel like we're still invisible. 2 years from now, I feel like it's gonna be checkmate.
Yeah. So talk me through one of your expansions, right? So let's say, and the reason I'm wanting you to do this is so that a new agent, maybe somebody that's listening to this, that's just getting started down this path of, you know, creating content and developing a hyperlocal brand. When you walk into a new community, now you've got a process for doing this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Step one through five, like, what do you do when you go into a new community? What's the goal, you know, day one, day two, day three? Like, how are you able to expand this process now?
Yeah, we call it activating the farm. How do you activate your farm, right? There's like five steps to activating the farm. The first thing is you have to identify the farm, right? I believe that you have to be passionate about what it is. But you've got to identify it first. And you want to make it smaller rather than larger. The mistake that most agents make is that they try to make it too big in the beginning, right? So you've got to figure out something that's going to work for your budget. So it goes back to numbers a little bit, right? If you only have $250 to spend a month in your business, right, then your farm should probably be no larger than 500 homes, right? So think like 50 cent per postcard type of thing, right? And so let's just look at a 500 home farm, right? Let's say you look at it and you say, okay, the turn in here is around 6 to 7%. That's okay. Right? Like the higher the turn, the better, but 6 or 7%, totally doable. Right.
And when you say turn, you're meaning the sales, right? 5-6% of sales that active.
Yeah. That sell every single year. Right. I would then identify, is there anybody that dominates this already? If there is, you may not want to potentially pick that area. They've already spent money and taken market share, but you'll find that there's lots of areas that are totally open. Because most agents don't do this. They're just bad. We're like squirrels. I mean, I suffered for this for years, right? I'm like, oh, go do this, go do that, go do this, go do that, right? So I would pick the 500. So once you identify the market, I call it zone, right? I zero in on the target market. Then I want to extract all the data. I'm going to take all that data out, and I'm going to put it into my CRM, okay? And I'm going to start filling in the blanks. So when you extract data from like the MLS or Remind or, you know, what you're going to put in is you're going to put in the home address and typically the name of the owner and maybe the year that they purchased, right? You want to understand what's happening here, like who they are. And then you're going to use different tools out there. There's one that a friend turned on to me called yourpeoplesearch.com. Right? It's got really good ways of being able to like put in a phone number or put a name and get information for free, right? You can use Coal information as another way to do it, right? Extract the data with Coal. There's different services that are out there. The whole idea is get everything into your database. And then if you don't have a lot of money, right, I would encourage people to go out and engage belly to belly first, right? Go and knock on that door. And just introduce yourself and add items of value, right? What is an item of value? Something that if you're helping somebody make money, save money, right? Or you give them inside information that they normally wouldn't have gotten, right? Like you're trading information. Like, so trading information could be like, I've got a buyer that wants to buy in this neighborhood, but there's no inventory, right? Believe it or not, that's trading of information. People feel like they've got now knowledge of something, right? And your job would be to go and literally systematically contact each one of those owners, right? And then fill in the blanks on like who they are, how long they've lived there, get to know, like, are they thinking about selling? And by the way, if you don't feel comfortable door knocking, then maybe you call, right? Like my business partner, Matt, door knocked and he crushed it door knocking. He got over his fear. He was scared, but he just did 40 doors a day. He would have 17 connects, right? And dude, he dominates his market right now. 3 years later, totally dominates it, right? So I would call, right? Okay, sorry about that. I would call, and then what I would also do is then I would start doing events in that neighborhood, right? Events being like an open house is an event. And another event could be like doing something like a clothes drive or a shred day, something that just socially gives back to the community, right? So once I got that event in place, I would make sure that I'm doing that at least once every other month. I'm making sure that I'm calling or connecting with at least 17 doors a day. And then I'm going to layer social media on top of it, right? Then I'm going to do very targeted, hyper-local ads, branding ads and listing ads to that target market. And I'm going to look like the authority by creating content that helps them make money or save money or trades in information, right? And I'm just going to do it over and over and over and over again. I'm going to become omnipresent. And I'm going to own the mind share of that market because they're just going to see me as the authority. And I'm going to pick this up and walk around as we talk, right?
How long do you feel like it takes, to implement a plan like this? Does it happen over a few months? Does it happen over a few years? Like what do you feel has really become the timeline for these things?
You know, it took Matt, kind of sitting back here a little bit. It took Matt 3 years to dominate his neighborhood, but I think that it took that long because he didn't have a social element to it, right? He wasn't doing a lot of what you and I had been talking about doing. I think that you can expedite this entire process and crush it within a year, right? If you're really systematic with contacting everybody in the neighborhood, then you're laying it with direct mail, then you're doing your events, and you're doing your social media strategy, right? And you're just omnipresent in the community. I think it's a year, and you've now become the biggest voice in that community. Agents don't stick to anything long enough, which is the problem. Right? They are constantly shifting directions. They try something for 2 or 3 months, then they switch, and they try something else for 2 or 3 months, and then they switch, and they don't ever build a business. You've got to just go deep for an entire year, and the magic happens. The magic just starts happening after that. Referrals, leads, listings. I mean, it's pretty sick, right?
Yeah, and I think that you can't ever underestimate how fast time flies, right? I mean, usually when you're in the middle of something, it feels like time's, stalled out forever. And then when you're really like thriving, it feels like time's flying faster than it ever was. But the truth is, everybody, at least that I've talked to, feels like 5 years ago was like yesterday. I've never ran into anybody who was like 10 years ago was so long ago. Oh my goodness. I can't believe how long ago that was. It's like, yeah. That was literally yesterday, and this is where we were at, and we're here today. Like, so the time's going to, A, fly, and B, going to pass anyway. So you might as well go all in. I hear this recurring theme from every one of the leaders, and I want to repeat that, from every one of the leaders in the industry, the top producers in the industry, that I don't hear from the lower level of production in the market. And that is, stick to one thing, do it consistently, follow a plan, know your numbers. And so there's this very like it's not like a unique plan at all that you guys seem to be following that the rest of the industry just doesn't. And your success is evidence of how simple building a business is. I'm not saying that it was simple for you, like it was easy because it took work, but you know, it's amazing to me how simple the plan you just laid out is, but how many people that listen to this podcast right now won't go implement it.
Yeah, it's about execution. You know, it's one thing that I feel that agents need. Like even if you read the Red Book, right, Gary's Millionaire Real Estate Agent book, or if you read it, if you take any kind of training out there, right, what's missing is that nobody gives you the actual system, the business in a box, with a checklist of all the things that you actually need to do on a particular day to move the needle forward. What happens is everybody gets caught up in learning like, oh, I'm going to go do expires withdrawals and learn how to do expires withdrawals. I'm going to learn how to do open houses. Now I'm going to go learn how to do like direct mail, or I'm going to try to do direct mail. Oh, that didn't work, so I'm going to go back to open houses. Oh, they talk about doing your sphere in your database, and I got to do a 33 touch in my sphere in my database, and like, I'm going to do that, right? And it's like, they're so spread out everywhere, and there is no continuity to what they're doing. And nobody's showing them that, listen, there's this business in a box, and day one, on Monday, this is what you're going to do. And these are the five tasks. And these tasks are going to build on the next 5 days. And then those tasks are going to build on the next five. And that's where this layering starts happening, right? And then you wake up 5 years later and you're like, damn, I have a big business, right? Because I was consistently building a business and not being spread in 1,000 different directions. And so you're right, the plan is not a difficult plan. But it does require consistent focus. And I find that people lose focus. And if you could keep an agent focused, if you can keep an expansion organization focused on the thing that matters most, then they can build a really big business. So by the way, I'm going to, one number that I give every one of my expansion to look at, right? I said, guys, there's a lot of numbers that we pay attention to in our business, but there's one number that's more important than any other number in our business, if whether you're an individual agent or if you're running a team. You know what that number is, Grant? I know you always talk about like what's your acquisition cost for a client, right? Like I love that. No, but this is an easier number than that. That requires math for an agent, which is typically tough, right?
I don't know what is. What is it?
It is, what's your listing number? Mm. What's the number that you're going to live and die by every single month to get, right? Because the way it works out is if you want to do 24 transactions in a year and start creating leverage in your life, right? Then you just need to take 12 listings. That's just one listing a month. Can you take one listing a month, come hell or high water, right? That's all you're going to focus on. Just take one a month. And by default, that listing is going to create at least another 12 buyer opportunities, right? And you now got a 24 deal a year little business, right? Now, let's say you want to amplify that. 2, then 3, then 4, then 10. Whatever the number is, you pick that number, and then that's the number that you're focused on completely. Your entire direction of your company is like, where are we in relation to our listing number? Because profit gets taken care of. Buyer leads get taken care of. Everything gets taken care of from there in our world, right? Then you have to make sure you have the right systems and ops and service and all that. But that's a byproduct of you creating a lot of listings, right? And so you always hear, well, listings, you know, is the golden thing, but agents don't have a number, right? So if I'm coaching an agent, I'm like, so what's your number, right? What's your listing number? Where are you in relation to that number? If you haven't hit it, let's not even talk. Go get that. Go figure it out, right? All you need's 2 or 3, whatever the number is. Changes your life.
I love it.
And as soon as I focused on that number, and by the way, that was my coach that gave me that, right? Then our world changed because now I wasn't focusing on all the different things that I had to do. I only had to focus on one, right?
Focus. And I was
like, if I focus on that one, then everything else gets taken care of. So it goes back to Gary's one book or Jay Papasan's one book, right?
Yeah. I love it.
That is my want.
Man, I appreciate you so much for stopping by the show here today. A lot of great content. I realize we've kind of gone over on time here, but it's such a great conversation. I hope that if you guys are listening to this, you learned a ton today. I have a page full of notes. I definitely learned quite a few things. So I really appreciate you, Rob, for sharing. If somebody wanted to connect with you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
They can go online, find me, Rob Chavez, C-H-E-V-E-Z. Go on Facebook, Instagram, you'll find me and just DM me. Or go to our website, thecazagroup.com, C-A-Z-A group.com. They can connect with me there. So.
Awesome. We'll make sure that we link that up in the show notes, guys, so that way you can connect with Rob. I highly encourage you to do it. This guy's a giver. We've known each other now about a year and a half, and we've had such an amazing relationship, and I'm looking forward to seeing where that continues to go. This guy's doing some big things, and it's only going to get bigger and bigger from here for sure. Thank you guys again for tuning into the Marketing Genius Podcast. Make sure that you continue to listen to us on our website, rate us on iTunes and Google Play. We will see you on the next episode. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Marketing Genius Podcast. Please make sure you remember to rate us on iTunes and Google Play so we can continue to bring you interviews of some of the most influential people in real estate to help you grow your business.